All right. So welcome to the Search and Seizure Show. I do see people lighting up the chat board real quick. I'm joined with my good friend, Mike Boone. How are you?
I'm doing quite well. How are you?
You look pretty good for a retiree.
Man, I tell you,
Is it still surreal?
A little bit. Yeah. It's a month and a half or so, but it's good, my friend. It's good. I highly recommend it.
Yeah. Well, we're going to talk about your future plans also. So guys, my name is Anthony Bandiero, attorney and senior legal instructor for Blue to Gold. And we're going to do a quick podcast here. This was kind of put on the books last minute, but we do have a lot of questions to answer. We also have some people on the chat, not as many as normally, because we just put this on the books, like I think yesterday, whatever it was. So if for those who are watching live, if you have a question for us, Mike and myself, please just say, hey, I got a question. You can type your question, but preferably we'll get you on chat.
Yeah, we love.
I'm sorry, our microphone.
We love chatting with you.
That's right. All right. So actually, Sean Thompson, you know, one of our biggest fans.
I saw Sean.
He clearly has no life, by the way. I mean, by watching a show like this, you should be watching Sean Ryan or something like that. Right. Or was it? Is it Sean Ryan, Rick?
Yep.
Yeah, Sean Ryan. Or
what's that from?
Sean Ryan, It's a podcaster.
Oh,
you know who? Yeah, you're not cool.
Yeah, I'm not.
See, I'm kind of cool.
I will absolutely tell you, I am not.
Yeah,
and everyone will believe that.
Yeah. So what do we have here? This is actually one of your retirement gifts.
Yes.
From a good friend of ours.
It is from a good friend.
And
of
it looks very expensive.
I don't know, but yeah, it's from Ireland, single malt whiskey. There, supposedly they have the water. You know, in-house,
yeah,
they make everything's is single farm origin there. So, thanks.
Well, look,
thanks, friend. Thanks, Matt.
Right. No matter what it costs, so I'm sure it wasn't cheap, but at the same time, it is really, it's just a beautiful bottle. Yeah. My brother, many moons ago, used to be a connoisseur with this kind of stuff.
Mm.
He got trained up. You know, he's probably lost his edge a little bit just because he's been out of the business a little bit.
We'll do that some
now time. He's a natural light kind of guy.
Some fantastic glasses here.
Yeah, it is. Oh, yeah. So that's another thing that this came from John Ween, another instructor of ours, actually made this. It was a decanter plus laser edge glasses.
That's awesome, John.
All right. So let's talk about the first case. This one is from.
Wait, I saw Sean's face finally. You guys did
a
little thing there.
Actually, a lot of people actually mentioned that.
Yeah.
Like
you said, he is, if not 100%. On every one of these shows here.
It was great
to put a face to the name. So.
Yeah. No,
nice to meet you, Sean, kind
of. Yeah, no, a lot of people just said, oh my God, it's so cool that you showed him. I thought he was way better looking. And he put the emoticon with the sunglasses. So
nice.
This is from an officer in California in a, you know, Kern County, which is, you know, up north, kind of a rural. So he says, basically, like, why would an ungated front yard be curtilage, but not the rear 10-acre property that restricts visibility inside a tall gate, right?
Oh, okay.
Enclosing the home. So he goes on to say, I'm a big supporter of what you do for law enforcement community. Enjoy the YouTube videos. I'm glad somebody does. You know what I mean? My wife won't watch these videos, but at least he does. In a lot of your videos, the front yard of a house is automatically curtilage. I want you to kind of address that. You know, we got to be careful with the word automatically, but he is correct that generally speaking, we do talk about the front yards being curtilage, but not everybody agrees with that sometimes. Mm-hmm. I am looking for clarification regarding the four Dunn factors. Okay. So I want to talk about automatic front yard curtilage. I want you to talk about Dunn factors.
Okay.
It appears that in the 10-acre example I gave, we have one enclosure, 10 acres, site screening.
Okay.
In the front yard example, there is only proximity to the home. There is no site screening, enclosure, and it appears, that the backyard is even more enclosed and so forth. All right.
Okay.
So, and he says, I say this because there's apparently no evidence of anything happening there or, you know, no like private activities besides car parking and maybe the grass getting periodically mowed.
periodically.
The following case was part of the reason I've been second guessing whether all front yards are curtilage. And he says, he brings up a case, which is a case that actually, quite frankly, I didn't read it because we just got this, I think today. Well, I got it today, but I want to throw it in the mix.
Okay.
So the first thing, Mike, you know, should we really just automatically think that front yards are curtilage?
Automatically?
No.
That's a word we don't really like to use much in our conversations. There's
there's always something that's unique about what's going on, factors that we like to talk about. So automatic is something that I'm not a fan of usually. Yeah.
Now, he said these four done factors. Yeah. What are those done factors?
Those done factors we talk about came from a DEA case. We won't really get deep in the weeds on that. But they talked about, like, these. How do we analyze whether or not it's curtilage or not? You know, mm-hmm. what, you know, in the cop's mentality and the court mentality, what are we looking for? And, you know, the first one usually has come up is the adjacency to the home, the domicile, let's say. It's like, how stinking close are we to where people live? You know, the residence there is one of the big factors. And that one carries pretty significant amount of weight if you're going to weigh in on those. And as you mentioned, they're talking about enclosures. You know, we have the white picket fence around things here, or, you know, depending on where you're at, the other type fencing around there. And then we've got another one that is a pretty heavy significance in there. What is it used for? Mm. You know, the domestic life aspect. What, you know, the courts talk about, I think it's something, you know, there's a psychological association with it. Like, there's, you know, you have attachment to this part of your home. You know, what do you use it for? Is it the barbecue areas where the kids play? Is it a little, you know, gardening area, whatever it is, something mm-hmm. that you are kind of intimately associated with in that circumstance. And then, you know, talk about site screening. Is there a big, something that's been manufactured, plants or a wall that physically prevents you from seeing in there? It's kind of your four factors. And when we talk about them, you know, I think that the adjacency and the use are our two biggest things we really want to look at. Now, the fencing is, hey, this is, I want a little bit of exclusivity here, but that's not everything. But you look at that use and closeness to the home.
So, yeah. So I think about a case called Collins v. Virginia to kind of give me some guidance here. You know, we don't have that many curtilage cases that go to the U.S. Supreme Court. And sometimes, there's not a lot of Supreme Court cases anyway. I mean, only 70 mm-hmm. so cases go to the Supreme Court every year, right? Out of right. thousands of
very small percentage,
right? So the Supreme Court doesn't have time to litigate all these different things. But one of the cases I think about is Collins v. Virginia. Mm-hmm. And to kind of give me some guidance here about what the Supreme Court would decide here, because there they had a duplex. Mm-hmm. This guy named Ryan Collins, he ran from the police on a stolen motorcycle. A
motorcycle thief, right?
That's right. So I just want you to picture a duplex, left and a right. On the left-hand side is his house, and there's a carport. There's a long driveway, there's a carport. Okay. And the carport does have, you know, three sides as the house, and has a little brick wall, and then it has the driveway. But you can definitely see it from, you know, the street. Mm-hmm. And the Supreme Court there said that was curtilage, and they suppressed, they did not uphold what the police did there, which is going onto the curtilage to go seize that motorcycle mm-hmm. that they saw in plain view. They try to argue the motor vehicle exception, but you can't use the motor vehicle exception, because if you're going into a house or a protected area like the house, you can't use just, you know, you have to have exigency, which motor vehicle sections don't. And I'm just like looking at this, and I'm like, okay, well, yeah, you can really put a lot of stock into the three walls, mm-hmm. but there's no site screening.
No,
but it is very damn close to the house, mm-hmm. and it's used for domestic activities. Where you park your car, it's not where you you have barbecue, but it's where you park your car. That is kind of associated with domestic life.
Yeah,
you
absolutely.
Know, it is kind of, right.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, and why wouldn't a front yard? And I think to myself, you know, most front yards to me, unless they're like super huge, are associated with domestic life. It is where you play, you know, catch with your kid. It's where you maybe have your lawn chairs down, just hang out. And, you don't have to be doing those things to have curtilage.
No.
But it is, you know, if I had a car parked in my grass, which means I'm a classy guy, you already know, you can picture it, right?
Oh, yeah.
You know, I have a mullet with the IROC Z.
Nice.
And I had my IROC Z on my lawn, and I saw people, you know, looking into my car. Could I make the argument that they're on my curtilage and they're like violating I shouldn't say privacy, because, mm-hmm. you know, it's maybe some of the stuff is in plain view, but they're on my curtilage. Well, I think I can make that argument.
Yeah, you'd be offended, wouldn't you?
I would be offended. I mean,
they're probably trying to steal your REO Speedwagon tape.
Oh, they definitely.
8-track or cassette?
Well, if it's it's an IROC, so it's probably cassette.
Cassette, yeah.
Yeah, it's cassette, so it's, yeah. Yeah, I don't know which one would be the 8-track one. That's, I don't think they had IROCs back then.
Yeah, maybe not too far back. Huh?
Yeah.
I just aged myself a little bit more.
Probably there. Pretty much. But the problem, the thing is, though, it's like, and I also have a case where, and I don't have the name off the top of my head, but basically the officers went up to the yard and they just looked into the window. Mm. There's no fencing. they are damn close to the house. You said use and proximity mm-hmm. and adjacent. But they said that was clearly, like, they said that was curtilage, right? Because it just...
No, yeah.
You know, I mean, I know looking into the, you know, looking to the window, but it's where they were was curtilage.
Right, like, are you lawfully allowed yeah. to be there?
Correct. So I just look, at the end of the day, we have other cases that talk about, you know, the front, how, the porch area was curtilage and so forth. I think it's a very good practice for you to presume, right? Not assume, but to presume. Assume means you just guess it. Mm-hmm. Presuming you have facts to back it up,
yeah.
if you know that, right? So I think it's good to presume that the front yard on typical houses, little front yard, is just part of the house.
Yeah.
And there are some cases that disagree with that. I've been, there was one case out of like Missouri or something where this guy was, he had like an old police car that was auctioned.
Oh, okay.
And I guess it came, either A, it came with some lights, which usually they take them out.
Yeah.
Or he put them back on.
Nice.
Pre-wired.
Exactly.
And, you know, he's playing the whole, you know, fake cop game, right? Mm-hmm. He's making people move out of his way. I don't blame him. He probably has an IROC Z2.
Probably, yeah.
And so.
And the sweet mullet.
And, oh, he definitely has a mullet if you're
which
acting
is back
like this.
In, by the way.
Yeah. There's my travels across the country is mullet is back in style, man.
Especially in cops.
Cops love mullets. Mm-hmm. And so he parked this police car right next to his house. Okay. And it was near the front door. And the cops went up there. They knocked on the door. They grabbed the car as evidence of his crime. Mm. And I was completely offended. I'm like, this is ridiculous. It's like, how does Collins, Virginia, in the little car, but that is his like constructive carport. It's right next to his house. Mm-hmm. It is his little space. It's not like, and the court said not curtilage. I wouldn't have decided that case that way because it's right next to his house. Mm-hmm. It's where he parks his car. It's right by the front door. I think that that's as good as a designated carport yeah. in, right?
Did they use those Dunn factors in
that
case?
They did.
And they just decided.
They decided in that case that it was, it was.
So then they upheld the
seizure of the vehicle, right?
Interesting.
Yeah. And so I don't like that case, but I bring it up because we could, like, this officer, like, we can have these debates.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, if I'm a cop working this day and age, I'm going to be very careful about what I do on front lawns. I just am.
Oh, yeah.
Because my default is curtilage.
Mm-hmm.
Would you agree?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Okay. And the courts have, you know, handed out some pretty heavy discipline when we violated curtilage. You know, we've gotten ourselves into use of forces when we shouldn't have been there. Yep. And we're paying the penalty on some of those things. So,
yeah, people are talking about the 8-tracks, by the way. You got people started. So,
hey, you know, I'm appreciative that somebody knows what an H-track is out there.
I just wish I could grow a mullet. All right. So we have another one. Let's get through these. And if anybody has questions, please let me know. And please keep the comments coming. So another officer from California. And this one says, can officers, and just so you know, from my audience, a lot of these we just got recently. So I have not read all these. And so hopefully they make sense. So can officers enter a house to arrest during a domestic dispute when the victim is outside and only the suspect is moving inside? So this is a very common situation. Mm-hmm. So no kids are in danger. The suspect, a 50-year-old heavyset man.
Very descriptive.
Very descriptive. You had to put that in there.
Right.
Discriminatory. Is standing on a second story balcony. He is unlikely to flee as he speaks with the officer and states they cannot enter without a warrant.
Is that because he's heavyset? He's not going to flee?
Totally. I mean, he's the victim, his wife, is outside and reports that there is a gun in the home. Change of facts, change the answer, which is kept in a downstairs bedroom. She also states that they have her permission to enter. Additionally, there is probable cause for domestic violence. Can officers enter the house? All right, let's slice this up one step at a time.
Okay.
Okay, I think the first thing is, if she gives consent and he says, no, you cannot enter, do we still have consent?
No.
Why not?
George versus Randolph. So she's saying we can go in. He's saying no. They've got what appears to be marital home, equal authority. Tie goes to the no. They cancel each other out, essentially, and he has the authority to keep us out of there.
And he's present.
And he's present, yes.
Just not in the facts, but just since we're on it, what if he was in the house, he was not at the balcony, we don't know his position on this either way, but she's like, yeah, go ahead and get him. Let's say he's on the couch.
Okay.
And she says, go ahead and get him. And we okay, cool. And she even gives us the key if the door is locked. We open the door, we enter, he's on the couch, we are in the house, right, through her consent. And then he says, get out. Can we take him and go?
Yeah.
Why?
We've already bridged that constitutional
threshold.
Right?
Yeah.
Through her valid consent.
Mm-hmm.
And there was no opposition from him at the time. And by the time he opposed it, we were lawfully positioned inside that home.
So, I think that's a great point because it happens all the time. Mm-hmm. In a sense of what happens all the time is that officers are lawfully inside a residence for domestic violence, mm-hmm. whether through agency or consent. Right. Let's say, you know. But then they're about to go what I call habeas corpus. They're about to put hands on mm-hmm. the person. And they're like, whoa, you need a warrant. Don't arrest me. You can't believe, oh, right. damn it. You said it before you I grabbed you.
Right. No.
Damn it, you're quick. You can grab and go mm-hmm. as long as you're lawfully inside the house.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Now, let's continue.
Okay.
No gun yet. Okay.
Okay.
No gun. He says we can't come in. We already know the answer. We're not getting there with consent. He's on the balcony. It is a misdemeanor domestic. It's not like strangulation. He doesn't have evidence under his fingernails. It's not something like that.
Okay.
Should we be going into the house and grabbing him under those facts?
No.
Generally speaking
is no. And then the question that comes up with that usually in this discussion is, well, hang on a second. My state law, my policy says this is a shall arrest.
Right.
So I'm just supposed to leave?
Right.
Well, the Constitution says yes. And to those facts.
The Constitution says just because it's a shall arrest does not mean you can override the
doesn't
guy's
mean
rights.
You get to go in there and habeas grab him inside his home. Under those facts.
Yeah. Georgia versus Randolph did mention this issue, by the way. It did talk about, you know, I'm paraphrasing here, but the U.S. Supreme Court said that, you know, we're not saying that, you know, his denial of consent means that you can't investigate a domestic violence and enter the home and keep people safe and so forth.
Oh, correct. Yeah.
But here she is out.
Yeah.
You know, in order to go in, you are going to have to articulate agency. Mm-hmm. Now, this is, there's not, I cannot find a lot of cases on this. I don't know if Zach Miller is here. Zach, are you here? I've not found a ton of cases on this particular issue. But, you know, I do think that the courts are going to be receptive to the argument that, hey, the wife is like, please, I just want to go back into my home, but I don't want to get beaten, you know, and so forth. Please protect me. It's almost as like an agency civil standby issue. Like, I call this the guardian angel logic. Mm-hmm. Like, at the end of the day, if the courts say, no, you still can't go in, but yeah, she's going to go in. Like, she's going in.
Okay, yeah. So she's like, well, I've got nowhere to go.
I got nowhere to, yeah.
What am I supposed to stay out in this cold tonight?
That's right. Yeah, it's snowing out.
I've got to go in my home.
Correct.
Yeah. I think there's going to be a lot of understanding from the courts in here to.
She's creating the agency.
She's creating the agency for us.
Right.
And like I said, kind of this guardian angel aspect. Yeah. We're preventing, we know harm has happened. We already have established that. And then going back in there again, well, it's. So does it take a big leap to say that harm may happen again?
I agree. I'm not going to make these decisions for mm-hmm. the cops. I think that if they can slow it down, if they can just convince her, if they have, you know, resources,
mm-hmm. yeah,
it's not worth an OIS. You know, we don't know about the gun yet, but
right.
it's not worth a lot of use of force over this issue. If we can just slow it down, just get that warrant.
Yeah, I agree.
But these cops are in a tough bind where I would just say, look, if she's going in mm-hmm. and you're like, she's like, this is BS. I can't believe it. I want to go to my home. You know, then I think you have to take care of business.
I think so too.
Now add the gun to the call.
Okay.
Does that, now do we have agency?
Well, let's kind of take two routes on this here. The way I'm reading this scenario, it's just, it wasn't involved. There were no threats made. She's just kind of now, hey, just so you know, there's a gun in the house here. And, you know, it sounds like the guy is not making any threatening statements in here. It's just somewhere in the home. Sounds like lawfully possessed in there. I would like a little bit more exigency, urgency in there. There was threats with the gun. I'm going to get the gun. You know, this something other than just having the right to possess a gun in your home.
All right. Let me add some more facts. What if the officers asked him to say, hey, look, we're concerned about the firearm. You know, we want to be safe here too. Mm-hmm. He has a high position, which I tactically.
Yeah, for sure.
And you say, hey, do me a favor, heavy set guy. Show me that belly, you know, show mm-hmm. me the belly, you know, show me your waistband. Uh-huh. Cause you know, he's probably wearing some shorts and he lifts up his waistband and you're like, okay, he has not have that firearm on his person. Mm-hmm. Now, where are you at on this?
I even more so where I was that there's not this exigent.
We're not going to kick the door in.
No.
And if you kick the door in, quite frankly, he's going to really be pissed and probably be kind of stand your ground type of mentality.
Right.
And now you're in a full blown.
Yeah. And you're making an unlawful entry in that.
Yeah.
And what's interesting here is, you know, talking about this high ground and this position of here. Well, you know, if she's, hey, I'm going to my sister's. Well, it's time to pack up and go.
Yeah.
You know, all right, cool.
Let's go.
How you getting to your sister's here? He's whatever it is.
Yeah.
Have a good day, sir. You know, that's not something we need to hold and stay any longer than we need to, if she's leaving.
I also, you know, let's also be mature about this too, because even if, let's throw the gun back into the mix, okay? Mm-hmm. He's not showing his shirt. He did have time to get the gun. You know, there's right, that.
Yeah.
Let's think about this. If you are like, you know what, I'm going to kick that door in because I think now he does have that gun. He's at a high position and so forth. Mm-hmm. And you have the option to retreat, right? It's safe to retreat, mm-hmm. okay? I know cops don't like to retreat, but...
Yeah, but that's...
Tactical reposition.
There you go.
The cops can tactically reposition. Isn't it a kind of an immature move to push it like that? Yeah. To actually, like, almost create that confrontation?
Oh, absolutely. And that was always one of the conversations we used to have at my old agency, where we talked about, you know, what these, you know, kind of de-escalating things here, but that imminent jeopardy and preclusion factors when it comes to use of deadly force. And we talked about that. Was a tactical retreat an option? Did we need to push? And a lot of the times we don't need to push. And that would be a circumstance like this guy. I think, let's just slow this thing down, back up a little bit here.
Yeah.
I know it's tough. I mean, that's
cops do not,
we're not wired that way. I get that. And it's go get, but this is one of those times we've got to have that dialogue, either if you're not seeing it or you're and talk to each other. Hey, hold on, let's slow this thing down here. What do we need to go in there for? You know?
Hey Rick, if you have time, there's a post-it note on my computer inside that office, and it says like regroup or something like that, or reposition. But I would love to, but anyway, the reason I wrote something, I think it's like regroup, whatever, mm-hmm. but I was watching an LAPD video, and I got to tell you, I am overall a big fan of their tactics. Okay. I think they just do, they don't rush things a lot. People out there are probably like, oh my God, they totally mess things up. People have their opinions, but, mm-hmm. But I just like, and I like what they do. And I was watching this video, and they were going up to this apartment, and it was one of these like agency calls. They probably could kick the door in, but they were not tactically sound, and they just use this phrase, and it was like regroup, it wasn't mm-hmm. that, but I'll hopefully grab it. But they just backed down mm-hmm. and they did it the slow way, which is yeah. tactical team SWAT, and that's what I think mm-hmm. they should do here.
Yeah.
Okay. Rick is gonna hook me up and give me that post note, and hopefully I had the impression that they were training that language.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't seem.
Redeploy.
Huh?
Redeploy.
It was redeploy. So they said okay, redeploy.
Yeah.
That's I love that. Mm-hmm. And because the other thing that LAPD does, and I'm a big person on slow things down, is they train it, because I talk to these guys. They actually verbally say slow, slow, slow when they're like doing you know, high stress, active shooter, whatever it is. Slow, slow, slow. They'll say things. We have time. Even though when time is of the essence.
Yeah.
Because even we know, as dumb cops, and we're not high speed, low drag like the tack teams. Slow is fill in the blank. Slow is
smooth. Slow is fast.
Yeah. Slow is fast. Slow,
yeah.
Slow, you know.
Yeah.
And because we learned that from EVOC. Remember in EVOC?
Oh, yeah.
Like you rush in, you're jerky.
And yeah, all that. Yeah.
Okay.
No. Yeah, I love that because it really is. It's, and I think that's where we are in policing these days, is that you've got to know when to slow things down.
Yeah. The last thing I'm going to say is that this officer did such a good job describing it. He said, since the situation involved a domestic violence incident, there was also the issue of a mandatory arrest requirement, which some officers felt justified the entry to ensure the arrest could be carried out immediately. Mm. And you hit that on the head.
Yeah, it's that shall arrest, right?
Right.
And I mean, the birth of this came way back in New York, where one Theodore Payton killed somebody, and they're at his house to arrest him without a warrant for the ultimate crime.
Yeah.
I think murder. Mercy.
Yeah.
Mostly a shall arrest, right?
It's not in the statute, but you know, but usually
most,
if you don't arrest,
more often than not, probably,
yeah, it's probably highly right? recommended. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So, you're right. So the Supreme Court did not say, so I like to say, just read your statute in line with the Constitution.
Yeah.
Because a 50 word statute cannot also include the millions of words that of case law.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not saying that cops have to know all million words,
no.
but they have to know a lot of the principles.
Exactly.
That's which keeps us in business. All right. This one comes from an officer in Ohio, and he's part of the Cleveland Regional Transit Authority, which is cool. He probably sees a lot of action there. So can police officers request a patron to show their fare card prior to boarding a bus or train? Now, we may not know the answer to this, but let's just see what he says and give us hopefully he'll have the statute in here. But there, he actually gives us a case, which you know, maybe I'll have to look this up before. He said the previous case states that it is unconstitutional for police officers to perform investigatory stops of passengers without reasonable suspicion or probable cause.
Sounds fair.
That the passengers have committed a criminal offense. My question is, can we have people show us their fare card without reasonable suspicion or PC? Example, we are inside a station and asking individuals in our fare paid zones to show their proof that they paid. Okay, can I take a stab at this one?
Yeah.
All right. So whenever it comes to suspicionless detentions, okay, we want four factors. This is called a special needs doctrine, okay, or the administrative search exception. We want notice, okay? So would a person be on notice that they're going to be stopped by their government and subjected to this type of seizure or search? Okay. Now, this may not be a search, but it's a seizure, right? Yeah. You know, you can't go forward and, you know, well, you are detained, especially if you're in the fare zone. Like, you can't go anywhere unless you show me that pass, right? Yeah. So is there notice? Notice can come from statutes, which apparently it doesn't exist, or he would have said it.
Right.
Notice can come from signs. Okay. The next thing is, you want minimally intrusive. So the best example of a special needs doctrine search is TSA.
Yeah.
Okay. We've all gone through, you know, unless you're a Mennonite or something like that, you've gone through the TSA process. They search all your luggage. They put you through an X-ray scanner, magnetometer, which is a search because it's searching for private information. And it has to be minimally intrusive. Originally, when the backscatter, you know, those ones that took the right, hole, the, right?
Yeah.
And originally, it would actually show body, the body, like it almost looked like an X-ray scan of the body. It would show genitals. It would show breasts. And you know, people obviously, you know, were, you know. And so now they look like the blob, right?
Yes.
So the reason why they had to, and they had to put the person, can't be on prem, can't you, the person doing the backscatter cannot see the person that's going through the machine. So it's just, you know, reduces that whole, like, you know, the visuals, right? And so the point is, it has to be minimally intrusive. Asking for the card could be minimally intrusive. So notice, minimally intrusive. The next thing is, and this is the big one, this is what's going to destroy this one right here, is lack of discretion.
Oh, right.
Okay. This is a big one.
Yeah.
Okay. So in the early days of airport security, in the early 1970s, mid 70s, when there's a lot of hijackings and piracy, the response by the federal government was air marshals, and they would just be in air, you know, because there weren't magnetometers in every airport, regionals didn't have, and they would just basically do the best job, and they would do criminal profiling. But you can take a wild guess of what nationality they were stopping the most. Most piracy and hijackers were Middle Eastern and so forth. So that was their main customer. And the court said, "Hey, look, you don't have that kind of, you know, you're basing pretty much on race, right?
Yeah.
And that's not that's discriminatory. You have to have, you know, a criminal profile, but just because they happen to be from a country that is, you know, part of that common, you know, origin, it's not going to be good enough.
Yeah.
So here, that's the problem. If the officer and you, even if he has a good reason, well, Your Honor, most of my fair skips, whatever you want to call this, are juveniles. I don't care. It's still, you know, if you're going to do a suspicionless seizure, it cannot, you cannot have any, just, you know, pretty much any discretion. Either it has to be a random, which is,
this would be a fair analysis for your DUI checkpoints every third, every fifth, every whatever,
or every, or everyone,
or everyone
like TSA but does.
Yes. There you go. Yeah.
TSA not only does everyone in 2024 and beyond, but they also do randoms. Have you ever been at the airport and it goes off?
I can't win the lottery or anything else, but I can win the random.
You can run a nice pat down, and look, I'll take it where I can get it. But that's why they're good. That random is not tied to your passenger number. It can't be.
No.
Because then it introduces discretion.
Right.
It's either random or it's not. Okay. So the last one is compelling need. Okay. Does the government have a compelling need to make suspicionless stops, DUI checkpoints, TSA, airport security? Random bag checks at schools. Here, it's debatable whether or not it is, it's even a compelling need.
Yeah.
But that's how I analyze this.
Yeah,
okay.
That's fair.
Yeah. So if you have a chief at the transit saying, "Hey guys, we have fare problems. People are not paying. Start just stopping people and demand." No, you can ask.
You can
if
ask,
they don't want to show you, And you don't have a law in the books that you must, I mean, which would be problematic anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. And I think with the ask, they have to be prepared for the no. Hey, correct. Can I see your fare card? No. Thanks. Have a nice day.
Yeah. Yeah. And look, I don't want to be, I'm not trying to turn into that guy, but people ask me all the time, like, Anthony, if we stopped you for speeding and we asked to search your car, would you tell us? And I'm like, no. And I love you.
Uh-huh.
But I can understand where people just want to kind of get to where they're going. Mm-hmm. Right. And if there's not a scheme in place, and move on.
I had a friend I worked with at the DEA, and his biggest thing in life was those damn people on the way out of Costco. He's like, I'm not stopping for them. I'm not going to, when you walk out of Costco, they check your receipt.
Oh,
they look at it. He's like, no.
Well,
and that was his, man. He loved to talk about that in the office.
And he didn't do any cases, but
he loved to talk about that.
And look, and just there's people out there. Do you have to show your receipt at a store?
I mean, it could be a store policy, but I don't think you're violating any law.
Well, you're definitely violating any law. But will you be trespassed?
Potentially.
Right? Yeah, they know who you are.
Yeah, because they don't want your business anymore.
Correct.
Yeah.
And that's the problem with that.
Yeah.
There was one case, actually, that said that not showing your receipt contributed to reasonable suspicion. But look, maybe I don't agree with that, but I love Costco.
Oh, yeah.
And I also hate showing my receipt, especially I got to tell you, since you got me in a store, you know, they'll like, especially the people that like, they just check off each, like, the toilet paper in the,
it's like 42 items.
I hate it. I'm like, come on, man. Come on, you know really? What I mean?
Yeah.
Just maybe you should do some criminal profile. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
All right.
We got Manny.
All right. Put him on. Walmart Greeter will tackle you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Not in California, right?
Yeah. Why does my nose look
so good evening.
On the side profile? What's up, Manny?
What's up, brother? How are you?
Good,
brother.
What's up, Mike? What you got?
I got a long one. I got two of them, but this one, I definitely got to bring this one up because it happened today, and it's a long one, but I need some clarity.
All right, so break it down nice and easy so we can take it, you know, so we hope we don't miss any pieces of it, but go ahead.
All right. Today, a call for service came out at a hotel. The call was that they told an occupant that's staying there he's done, he needs to leave, because the day prior, his hotel room was hit by narcotics, I believe it was.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, literally nothing happened out of it, but it was a motel.
Yep.
It was really the Motel 6, but they changed their name. It's like something else now.
Yeah.
So we go out. I go out a little later, and our deputy's there already. He's getting the details. You know, they're like, all right, well, he needs to go. They told him yesterday he had to leave. He's telling us, nah, bro, nobody told me I had to leave. But not only that, when I get on scene, he's agitated, of course. He's got 10 kids, him and his wife, and like, are living there.
They have two selling drugs. He has 10 kids. Go on,
he has
Amy.
Two rooms.
Yeah.
So I'm like, hey, how long have you been here? He goes, dude, since last July 2024. So 6 months. And I'm like, oh, wait a minute.
Mm-hmm.
And my brain starts working. I'm like, sounds more like a landlord-tenant dispute, but let's keep going. How do you pay? I do day-to-day. I pay day-to-day. So check out, check back in, but same room. I was like, how long have you had this room for? He's had the same room for like 2 months, and they've only switched a couple times because he said the hotel has made them switch.
The hotel makes them switch after how long?
Well, it's not their policy to have them switch. Yeah. He said that the hotel switched them because at first he had two separate rooms in two different areas of the motel. The doors outside, motel.
Okay.
And then finally got two rooms adjacent to each other, and those are the two rooms that him and his family stay in. We go to the front. I'm talking to the deputy. I'm like, what did the front desk tell you? He's like, hey, since the police were involved in them yesterday, it's their policy that if like the police are involved in your room, they want you out. They don't want you as a guest there. I'm like, okay, that's fine. I understand that. Here's the problem I'm having. The problem is he's been here for almost 6 months.
Yep.
I believe this is a landlord-tenant dispute now because the hotel presumed, my opinion, that he is now, he lives there. He has, like, his room is full of stuff, his clothes, dressers, everything. And so then we talk to the front desk. They're like, yeah, he pays every day, day by day. He had a couple different rooms, but we got the two rooms together. We offered him long-term stay, but he declined because you have to give a $1,000 down payment, and he couldn't afford it. And I was like, okay. Was there any verbal agreement that he was going to live here for a long time, anything like that? Front desk says no, but you know, after a while, we kind of figured he's staying here, and we offered him the long-term stay. I was like, okay, who did he speak to? Well, that person's not here. I'm like, okay, let's talk to the hotel manager. Hotel manager's like, nope, I want him gone. That's it. We've had some problems with him in the past where he just uses us as henchmen to like kick people out the hotels, which I disagree with, and so forth. So I talked to him again. I'm like, hey, man, I'm trying to really listen to the law, break it down, and et cetera. Supervisors looked into it. The county's like attorney, like we have the sheriff's office as their own attorney, and legal issues said, nope, no squatter rights. He needs to go. He's trespassing. It's a business. That's not a residency. He can't have a residency there. And I said, I don't think that's correct. And then they sent me the law. It's the Maryland's innkeeper's law. I believe that's what it is. Hold on. Yeah, innkeeper's law, Maryland. It's Comar 15203. With the business regulation and stuff. I'm like, okay. So I read through it and I'm reading it. I'm like, all right, okay. Like I kind of see it, what they mean. So I talked to, I'm not going to say the supervisor, but anyway,
sure.
I talked to him and we have a discussion. He was like, nope, it's, you cannot establish residency at a hotel. It's a business. The county code does not authorize that zoning for that hotel, for that place to become a residence for anybody there. The business is involved in bad practice and they're violating the licensing agreement through the county. Therefore, it doesn't matter if someone stays for a whole year, they cannot become a resident there, regardless if they do month to month, week to week, they pay for the whole year up front. So I'm like, okay, I talked to the guy again. He's like, look, CPS even got involved. They're willing to pay, but they don't want to pay the down payment. So I just pay day to day. And I was like, okay, worst case scenario, how long do you need to go somewhere else? He goes, dude, you have to give me a day. You can't tell me I have 10 minutes to get 10 of my kids and all my stuff out of my room. I'm like, look, that wasn't me. I don't know who said that. That wasn't me. I'm trying to work with you. I'm trying to work with Mr. the owner of the hotel. It's not reasonable at all. You need a good amount of time to do this. So then we all on the side, we're in the huddle. My argument, and maybe it's like my heart involved too, I'm saying like, I believe this is a landlord-tenant dispute. He has established residency. There's some type of oral agreement that the hotel offering him long-term lease is the hotel saying, hey, you are pretty much a resident here. Let's just offer you a long-term lease so it's a little bit cheaper. That's how I perceived it as.
Right.
The guy also kind of perceived it that way as well. Well, apparently, I was wrong. I mean, he's going to leave tomorrow, but apparently, based on the innkeeper's law, a hotel cannot become residency. Therefore, he does not establish residency because it's a business. Well,
So
I don't know if you want to look into the innkeeper's law just to get some clarity on it. Let's get back to me.
Well, look, I can always do that too, but I will tell you that I just did a search just on this issue because let's just start off. I have always taught that you got to be very careful here. There's a couple issues here, Manny. Number one is, you know, under the Fourth Amendment, the person, you know, when it comes to like, if you're going to criminally charge this person, right? Let's say we just, hey, you know, they want you out. I ain't leaving. Yes, you are. And you just walk into the person's room and, you know, you find drugs in plain view, right? And then I've always stated that at some point they can establish such a reasonable expectation of privacy that is similar to a house. Okay, they've lived there for 6 months. The expectation was that this was indefinite. This is their home. Also, you know, you are in Maryland. Let's not, you know, I don't care if you're in Maryland or Texas, but judges in Maryland, especially, are going to be very receptive to the, you know, this argument that, you know, that we don't want to, you know, we want to treat them fairly. I mean, this is where they live. I mean, you know, you have a lot of judges that just are concerned that we don't want to trample on their rights too. I mean, if, you know, so there's that issue. The other issue is that a lot of states do have a 30-day rule, right? Manny, like Illinois, California, Nevada, and several others have a 30-day rule. I have not seen that in here, okay? But the last thing is there's case law about tenancy issues. Now, I can tell you, Manny, that when I went to law school and I was taking my property classes, this issue came up. And the reason I bring this up, it can be very complicated. It's very complicated. People make their whole professional lives as lawyers dealing with landlord-tenant issues and make very good money on it, because when you violate that tenant-landlord-tenant relationship, you can be on the hook for a lot of money, because kicking a person on the street unlawfully results in a lot of damages. Mm-hmm.
We don't want to create homelessness.
It creates homelessness. Yeah. There's a public policy against. That's why these tenant laws exist. So, a lot of states, including yours, has various doctrines that will come into play and say, you know, even though this doesn't, you know, fall strictly under, it doesn't say in statute that this person is a tenant of the hotel, of the Motel 7, they still are under various doctrines. The first one is a tenant at will. This is way past the scope of this podcast, but I'm telling you, as a police officer, listen carefully, okay? You have to be very careful. If you're very cavalier about this whole thing, oh man, they've been here for 6 months, but this is a day by day thing, and they're not a tenant. Just get them the hell out of here. If you're cavalier about this thing, you're not thinking this through, and you're not really thinking about the big picture here, you can get really burned. So states have tenancy at will, which is, you know, hey, my friend can stay here to get back on his feet. That creates tenancy. Mm-hmm. That's not Cousin Eddie coming for Christmas. Now, your state has something called implied tenancy, and there's case law on this. Also, so that's the logic here. Have they created an implied tenancy? But also, Manny, I will tell you that I just pulled up two law firms, and they make it their specialty to sue when people have violated this implied tenancy rules. And I don't know all the cases. I have to do a lot of research, but it tells me there are lawyers in Maryland looking for these opportunities. So there's something here. Yeah. It says clearly here, okay, that a person in a hotel can create tenancy by expectations, by longevity, by whatever, right? Payment of rents, you know.
Manny, I think you made a good point in the fact that the motel themselves is trying to offer him a longevity benefit for staying X amount of time. You know, that they are also agreeing that you're gonna be here for a while.
It's not, look, I'm cool. Like, trust me, when there are a lot of cops out there that they want to simplify this as much as possible, because they need some bright line rules. We're not divorce attorneys. Even though some cops should be there for some, because they've been through enough of them. We're not landlord-tenant experts. We're just trying to do the best job we can out there. But this is one of those situations where you can get really burned by putting a father. No, look, I know he's a drug dealer, okay? But at the end of the day, he's a father with 10 freaking kids, okay? You kick them out on the street, and then some law firm called Pendergraph Firm in Greenbelt, Maryland, is going to pick up your case, and they're saying here that this landlord-tenant relationship can exist with a hotel guest. They're going to pick up the case, and they're going to say, Your Honor, 10, 11 people, just, I don't know if the wife is involved, but 11 people just got put on the street, okay, in the snow, because they lived there for 6 months, and the cop did not want to get eviction, tell these people to get eviction orders.
Yeah.
So, look, at the end of the day, I do not have your black and white answer, because this is not my forte. However, I am passionate about this, that maybe this is one of those cases where the cop just says, you know what? There's enough here for me to say, Hotel, Motel 7, you can create this too. You let this person stay here for this long, get eviction orders, give it to the constables, wherever you have in Maryland.
Yeah.
What else you got?
Hey, I sometimes do overtime at the jail, at the correctional facility. And what the overtime there is, we are used to transport prisoner inmates at the jail to their court hearings. So, you know, like either, you know, for their court case, their hearing, bail hearing, or whatever.
Those are called easy money?
Yeah, you know, it's cake. I'd rather work OT there than work patrol 16 hours or 24 hours, whatever.
Totally.
Anyways, so I think I know the answer, but a lot of these inmates talk to us and they tell us about their case. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I just shoot the shit with them because, you know, I rapport building and stuff.
Totally, yeah.
And some of the, you know, and they're talking. Some of them are like, some of the things they're saying are like, yo, that's pretty incriminating. Like, holy crap. And then I just go along with it. Like, yeah. I mean, I don't do anything with it. I have yet to do anything with it. But like, oh, so you did do that. Yeah, man, but you know, I'm trying to fight it, this, that, and the third. You know, that's not what I did. I actually did this instead. And I'm just hearing them and we're just talking. And in my head, I'm like, well, if this is critical for a case and he is just talking to me and he thinks I am a correctional deputy and not an actual patrol deputy, can that be used in court or me continually talking to him? Is that like incriminating, and is he incriminating himself under Miranda? That makes sense. I don't know if my question came out clear.
No, I don't know exactly what you mean. Mm-hmm. That is a very interesting question.
I'd say initially they're probably striking up the conversation, right, man? They're just like, hey, just kind of almost like spontaneous utterance. They're just telling you a little bit about themselves or talking about some stuff there, right? But I think the analysis would be, you know,
yep,
if you follow up with it, are your questions designed to elicit an
incriminating response? Yeah, so did you kill her?
Yeah, but are they in arrest-like custody? I mean, they're in jail, they're being transported, yeah, handcuffed, being transported, so probably.
Okay, so, all right, so look, this. So the first thing, the easiest way to handle this is that, you know, just having a conversation, rapport building with the person, hey, what are you in for, I guess, is, mm-hmm, you know, I mean, that's not necessarily incriminating.
No.
Because it's a status thing. It's a booking question.
Yeah, we're chatting, yeah.
But, you know, but if they're like, yeah, I mean, I really did some bad things in my life. Mm-hmm. And then they're like, yeah, like what? Mm-hmm. I still think they're going to get some, you know, like, oh, yeah, I killed a person. You killed a person. When? Mm-hmm. And then you start, you know, asking those questions like, I think that's probably, you know, the question is, are you asking a question that would likely or foreseeably elicit an incriminating response, right?
No.
Yeah. How'd you kill her? Why'd you kill her? Yeah, where'd you bury the body?
More detail oriented. Yeah. Yeah, that would very much be incriminating.
But the next question that Mike brought up is, you don't need Miranda or its safeguards if, mm-hmm, you don't have custody. Mm-hmm. Now, custody, you might think, well, Anthony, you're an idiot for even talking. They're in custody in the back, well, of a freaking transport van. Yeah,
but what are their conditions? Are they short-time or jail, or this is where they live forever?
That's right, for the foreseeable future. So a jail can become their residence, mm-hmm, right? Just like the Motel 7 can become a person's residence, right?
Yeah.
So so you need to analyze this, Manny. But the question is that suspect or that inmate, is he there? First of all, if he's post conviction, would it be post conviction or pre conviction? Are they all pre conviction?
Yeah, pre conviction, correct.
Okay,
yeah.
So the question is, if they're pre conviction, is that their home? Like, are they, you know, not released on bail and so, mm-hmm, forth? The answer is, the better argument is that if they are pre conviction, you got to be very careful because the law, you know, we lean on a side of caution here. But pre conviction is, are they there for a while? Like, is that their residence now? Like, versus the guy who's just waiting for bail, or the guy who just got booked in last night and is going to jail or going to court for an arraignment. He's not, that's not his residence. But if he's there, like, and he's not going to be released, the better argument that I would make is that is not Miranda custody. Mm-hmm. Miranda custody has a certain definition from Behealer, which is the Supreme Court case. And the Supreme Court would probably say that that's their residence.
Yeah.
And they're probably not in custody.
Now, let me ask you this, Anthony. So, okay, let's say the jail is their residence, right? Does transporting them now, so you got to bring them down, put them in shackles,
correct,
put them in, you know, whatever, restrict movement, more confining to transport to jail. Do you think that becomes, mm-hmm, part of the discussion?
It definitely becomes part of the discussion, mm-hmm, but whether or not it works is, I think that Shaster... but anyway, the, mm-hmm, the Supreme Court case there is that the way you look at those issues is that level of confinement, is that more than they're typical than for them?
Normal. Yeah.
So in Shasta, again, I wish somebody, Sean, maybe back me up on this. This is the case where the guy was taught, he was basically confessed about a rape or something of a child, or killing a child, whatever it was. Years, he was already convicted. He was in prison. Mm-hmm. And the Supreme Court said that, you know, being taken in handcuffs to the conference or the interrogation room, the fact that the door was closed, you can't even get out without asking permission. All those things were in line with the level of confinement that he was used to. So it really wasn't upping his, it wasn't like arrest like custody.
Mm-hmm, was it? Yeah.
So that's the answer there, Manny, is that if everything is normally how he's treated, he normally goes in shackles and vans. That's part of his process, which it is. Mm-hmm. That's not gonna be a deal killer.
All right.
Can I just say one more thing? At the end of the day, too, quite frankly, I say just do it mm-hmm. because it is kind of murky anyway. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, I don't really see a lot of CEOs that are like driving to the hospital and they're like, oh, man, you want to talk about your case? Hey, hold on. You have the right to remain silent. Yeah. Oh, shit, I almost got a red light. You have the right to just have a conversation with these guys. Yeah. And you're not violating any rights mm-hmm. unless it's used against them in the case in chief.
Yeah, testimonial. Yeah.
And testimony only in the case in chief. Mm-hmm. So you can still tell the prosecutor, hey, this guy just confessed. Mm-hmm. They can use it for impeachment. They can use it to chase down evidence. If he says, yeah, I ditched a gun at my cousin's house, they can go get a warrant based on that. You know, it doesn't violate their rights on that. Right. So if you're just unsure, I say talk to him.
Yeah.
And go from there.
Or just be a good ear.
Or even better, if you're a good ear and you're not asking any questions, there's no issue at all.
There you go.
All right, Manny, never call us again because your questions are the most complicated questions and you really make me work, man. Lose my number.
Good stuff, Manny.
Damn, man, for real? All right.
Hey, whoa. The guy's been here for months. He knows my humor. And now it takes a turn.
I'm just kidding.
All right, now you're kidding. Now, see, I took it personal.
Yeah, huh?
All right.
Hey, you weren't there last week, but I suggested in the webinar, the Church of Sea show, I was like, hey, you know, we have all these conferences, like, you know, the National Interdiction Conference and the DUI conference. I was like, why doesn't Bluto go do a Fourth Amendment conference?
Yeah, exactly.
And just have these instructors come and,
so, you know. Okay, go do this, Manny. You ready?
Sure.
Type in your web browser.
Okay.
Do you have a web browser? I mean, I'm sorry. Do you have the internet right now?
I'm in my car right now.
Okay. When you get a chance, type in 4aconference.com and see what website that goes to.
4aconference.com. Yeah, type it right now.
Fourth Amendment, right? 4aconference.com. Hey, Sean, type in 4aconference.com. What website does that go to?
Hmm. Yeah, I forgot. Yeah, Manny, when Zach and I are on the show here talking about.
So all I got to tell you is, my friends, great minds think alike.
Mm-hmm.
And it's on my radar, so it's coming.
Yeah. And what do we say,
man? Oh, okay. I see it.
that's Bluto Gold, right?
Yes, sir.
Yes. So it's there. I bought it. It's in a holding pattern because, I put a lot of stuff on Rick's plate. but we are going to have that coming up ASAP, which doesn't mean in a few months. But anyway,
it's in the works.
So Manny, great minds think alike, my friend, and you will be there as my guest.
Nice. All right,
just let my agency know so they can send me.
Yeah, you'll get a free registration for me too because you're my buddy.
Nice.
I'm just kidding. You pay for the price. Okay.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome, Manny. You're great, man. All right. So the next question is, Rick, do you have access to? Yeah, and actually, Sean says he's going to stay at our house, and this will be in Las Vegas, I'm pretty sure. Because people love Vegas as a conference destination.
Well, maybe I won't live here by then, so.
Yeah.
I can come back to Vegas.
No, that sucks. I need you here, man. All right. So this question, I don't know if this is an officer or not. I think it's an officer. It just didn't put his agency in there. But he put in here IP address, right? He says, he said right here, I'm an IT technologist supporting a PD in collecting forensic data for detectives in a criminal case. One of the most important tasks is identifying a suspect from their internet protocol, their IP address, after it has been found in the server of an email, social media, or other internet service provider. Is Nick here? Is it better? Is Nick here by any chance? Nick is not here, is he? Our social media instructor? Yeah.
Sure, Teresa.
Yeah, Teresa. Is Nick here?
Tell him to get on the phone.
Can he come on the mic real quick?
That's right. Hey, what's up, Anthony?
Hey, buddy. Hey. Let me see if you can help me answer this.
Mike?
Hey.
So I know it's late there because you're also in Maryland. But can you help me? Just what is your opinion on this? Okay. This is basically in a nutshell to get your brain working here. It's how do you get information about the IP address, search warrant or subpoena? This person is saying, I think most people know that IP addresses, subscriber info, everybody has a unique IP address. Is it better to identify this by getting a search warrant to seize business records or via a subpoena demanding the records be produced? We've done the former. We've done subpoenas with some success, but waiting through the seized materials. He said the former. He said basically we got a search warrant, with some success, but waiting through the seized materials is time consuming. He says a subpoena makes the target do the work. I didn't think about this, by the way. Assuming the target is not involved in the criminal activity. Okay. So what do you have an opinion on this? Like getting a search warrant or subpoena to get the subscriber info. Sure. So first of all, let's just make sure that people understand that Nick is the guru of social media. The guy teaches a phenomenal class about social media investigations. I'm not necessarily sure this is in your wheelhouse, Nick, but you can tell me if it's not. But imagine I'm in your class, okay? And I say, professor, not call him professor, right?
I like it.
Professor, if I have the IP address, right? So I got a, IP address from an email, whatever. How should I get the subscriber info? Should I?
Just a subpoena.
Thank you.
So what you would do is we have the IP address. You could go to a website such as ipgeolocation.com, just off the top of my head. I think that might be a good one. Mm-hmm. It will then give you the internet carrier. So for instance, we'll say it comes back to Verizon Wireless.
Yep.
So then you're going to subpoena that IP address at that particular time that was registered to that customer for the registration records, if that makes sense.
No, it makes total sense. So you find out who the provider is first, and then you send them a subpoena.
Yep. And one spot where you can go to get how, who, and where to send these subpoenas would be search.org/ give me 1 second here. If you go to the search.org, you can go there and it give you a drop-down menu. You select whatever company you're looking for instance, the internet carrier company, and it'll tell you who, where, and how to serve that internet company with legal process.
That's awesome. So don't do your search warrant, which, by the way, as an attorney, I totally agree with what you just said. Mm. Search warrant is overkill for this. Mm-hmm. There is no right of privacy for these records, right, Nick? I mean, it's business records. All right.
I believe so. You're just looking for the basic registration information for the account. You would get a search warrant if there was any sort of like private messages and stuff, which would tie back to
not
the social media
info.
Account.
Right. And subpoenas are easy. They're lightweight. You can send them as a matter of routine for your investigation.
Yep.
Okay. Now it's my opinion, Nick, that you are the best social media investigator in the country. Am I right about that?
I don't know about that, but I appreciate the kind words.
I'll agree.
Well, look, that's actually the right answer, by the way, because your fans are allowed to say you're the best. Mm-hmm. But when you're the actual, just say, look, I appreciate your opinion.
Right.
You take it with humility like he does.
There you go.
Now, also, I guess my bigger point is that your training class, your full-blown training course, is you have to be a law enforcement official. Can a prosecutor take your class as well?
A prosecutor can, absolutely.
Okay. So you have to have government creds. But your class is on demand at BuddhaGold.com, right?
That's correct. Yes, sir.
Teresa, let's make sure that we get the link in the description so when we put this on YouTube, people can actually go to Nick's class and check it out. So, Nick, I appreciate you. Sorry to get you off the couch this late at night, but you're awesome.
It's all good. Thank you guys so much, and happy holidays.
Happy holidays.
Take care. Good talking to you.
Next question. I actually like this one. This is from a cop in Florida. If you ask an incriminating question, and later, you realize you get an answer, but you realize, oh man, I messed up.
Yeah, whoops.
I didn't actually read Miranda, or maybe I messed up and didn't give a waiver. Can we fix that?
Yeah.
How?
reading this, it was clearly not intentional. Mm-hmm. There was no malice behind this. I'm not trying to get around Miranda, trying to get somebody to
soften him up,
trying to soften him up. And there's interview techniques out there, interrogation techniques and whatever.
Yeah.
But in this here, it sounds like it was a mistake. They were speaking with this person and then they asked a question like, oh, wait a second here. This is a Miranda type situation. Mm-hmm. I've got arrested like Cussy. That question was incriminating and they know I'm a police officer. And so I said, yes. And we're talking about being able to maybe cleanse it or clean it up a little bit in it, here, as long as it's not intentional. And some of the things that are looked at, maybe, you know, a little bit of time goes by. I'd say being forthcoming with this person. Hey, you know, I asked you this question here before, just so you know, this was, you know, a situation where you need to be provided your Miranda rights before I was asked that question. You can talk about maybe little time lapse, like we said, another officer, another location. There's things that we can build in to try to clean this up. And if we do have this Miranda violation, you know, whatever information we glean from that there, let our prosecutors know too, like, mm-hmm. Hey, we screwed this up here. This is what this said. Here's what I did to try to fix it on the back end. And again, that person might say, hey, you know what? I understand that. I'm willing to still speak with you. Or they might say, you know, hey, you're bad. And they might just clam up on you, but be forthcoming with it and try to clean it up.
Yeah. Look, and at the same time, like as I said before, mm-hmm. just do it. I mean, do the best job you can. Mm-hmm. Try to fix it, and we can deal with it in court, because at the end of the day, the worst case scenario is we can't use it, what's called in our case in chief, which is we cannot present it as evidence on behalf of the state, but we can use it for impeachment. Like, oh, I was, you know, he says, you know, the person says, yeah, I was at the crime scene. I did it. I lost my cool. Then the lawyer learns that we're not going to use it because there's a minor violation. Mm-hmm. And so they start saying, ladies and gentlemen of the jury, my client wasn't even in town, right? He was in Omaha. Or then what we can do is say, well, actually, mm-hmm. you're lying. Because on the day of this incident, mm-hmm.
But like you said, let your prosecutors know. If there's an issue with it, let them know so they can get ahead of it, so they're aware that there's issues with it. So, yeah, for sure.
Okay. All right. We are going to get I got to phone a friend on this one. So, Amanda. Let's see if Amanda.
Ooh, man, we got Sean, Amanda.
Well, Manny. Amanda. But Amanda's not on the webinar. So, let's see. Mm.
Hello.
Hey, how are you?
Good. How are you?
All right. So you're live on the webinar. And so for those who do not know, this is Amanda. She's a Kansas police officer and she does a lot of search and seizure instruction in Kansas. Now, not to put any pressure on you, this is kind of a unique question involving juveniles. Okay. So the question is, so let's see here. We had a third party caller inform us that a runaway juvenile from another county was at a home in our city. We located the juvenile and he was also a suspect in a burglary case we are working. Mm-hmm. He was interviewed after bringing him back to, let me switch my page here, to the station, and the state was not notified of the questioning. They were advised he had been picked up. So I guess, I don't know how that works, who the state is, but you know, I guess CPS type deal. But I guess the question is, can you question and interrogate a juvenile suspect who's in custody without a guardian present? Do you know the answer to that?
I do not off the top of my head. Our JOs, our juvenile offenders, start at the age of 9. Mm-hmm. So anyone above the age of 9 is a juvenile, counts towards a juvenile offender. Anyone below is called a child in need of care.
Mm-hmm.
I know that, I believe the age of consent is 16 to waive Miranda without.
Okay, so at this point, we're thinking that what we're thinking here is that if you're over 16 or over, you can waive Miranda without a guardian. But if you're between 9 and 16, you probably need a guardian to be notified. Is that what you think the law is in Kansas?
I get them confused. It's either 14 or 16.
Okay.
I am off the top of my head. I do not know.
Hey, Amanda, I just, because I wasn't sure on this when I looked real quick on the way over here today. I think it's 14. Is your Kansas? Yeah, I believe so. Yes, is up for Kansas.
I'm sorry, I thought I didn't. Good, you did some research for this. That's good.
Well, yes, yeah, because okay. Again, this is I wasn't familiar with it.
And Willie, and Willie on our chat is also saying it's 14 in Kansas.
In Kansas.
So okay, perfect. Just good. Okay, so excellent job. So we're saying here if they're 14 or over, which they
doesn't say specifically, I don't think.
If they're 14 or over, we can just read the Miranda, get a valid waiver. Mm-hmm. We do want to make sure we do cross our T's and dot our I's on this because juveniles are always going to be more litigated for their confessions, but we can get a confession without their guardian present.
Correct.
I know a lot of places add that. Do you wish a parent or guardian to be present during questioning? This is a matter of maybe a safeguard.
It's a safeguard. It's a Miranda light.
Do you need it? No.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Cool. All right, Amanda. Thank you for coming on air. Let's get through these. So this one is from Tennessee.
Mm-hmm.
Can you search a vehicle based on the smell of marijuana when it is parked in the driveway or front yard of a residence?
I like the stipulation there. Driveway or
the front yard. Because that is yard. Often the same thing in Tennessee.
Yeah, exactly. You know what I mean?
It's a multi-use piece of... A recent debate came up between officers in reference to a vehicle being parked in a driveway to a house or in the front yard of the house. Again, I love it.
Mm-hmm.
Officers notice it is occupied and make consensual contact with the occupant. Subsequently, smelling the odor of marijuana emitting from the vehicle, is a search of the vehicle permitted, or is it a violation of the curtilage issue?
Hmm. Interesting. So, sounds like the driveway or the front yard is probably going to be on curtilage to start, right? Well, we talked about the front yard earlier today. How adjacent to the home is it? Does he pull right up to the front door so he can walk in? Let's say for the sake of argument, it is on curtilage, right? And so I believe Tennessee, it is illegal, correct, to have or smoke or possess
Mary Jane
in any way, shape, or form. So, you've got a crime taking place here. They're on your curtilage here. Make consensual contact. So, is there something that's bringing you to the issue? Yeah, there's something that's, a crime occurring that's bringing you to what's going on.
I think that we can presume that. I think that let's say that this is a good old-fashioned knock and talk. Sure, it's curtilage.
You're right.
But they're in their car, hanging out, listening to music. I definitely do not teach it. You can't go up to the car, even if it's on the front yard. That seems like an approachable place for a neighbor or Girl Scouts to be like,
or
how
if
are you doing?
Parking in the front yard, that's where you access it.
I have no problem with that so far. Yeah. So now you smell the marijuana.
Yeah, I smell the marijuana.
And we say, get out. We're searching the vehicle.
Well, you're going to have to articulate exigency in that. Because we talked about Collins before and doing a warrantless automobile search on curtilage. And with Collins, it's going to be a no. But there was no exigency in Collins. And when we do our automobile searches, there's no inherent exigency that the courts are looking for. But I would say your exigency here is there going to be some destruction of evidence inside that car that you could say, hey, this guy's going to destroy the marijuana or whatever. So we're going to lose our evidence that we have from the smell, the observations we have, probable cause that exists in there. There's some underlying now or never type component there.
Totally agree. Absolutely. And I know it seems kind of weird, but we know from a case called Florida versus Hardinas.
Mm-hmm. Like the home itself, huh?
Curtilage is true like the home itself. So let's just, easy math. Let's apply all the rules that we do for homes to curtilage.
Mm-hmm.
If it is curtilage, which I think it is.
I think so, yeah.
Imagine I'm inside your house for consent, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I'm inside your house, okay? And I know you don't do any narcotics, but let's say that for the sake of argument, you are a marijuana smoker,
okay?
So I'm in your house consensually, and I smell the odor of raw marijuana, and you live in a state where it's illegal.
Mm-hmm.
And I say, Mr. Boone, have a seat on the couch. I'm searching your house for marijuana.
Mm.
Do you think that's lawful?
No.
Correct.
All right.
So how am I getting into your car then in the front yard?
That's good. I think this you're going to have to show that evidence is going to be destroyed now.
Right. And maybe you have that and maybe you don't. But that's what we want here. So look. I don't think most judges, but I think enough judges to concern me really feel, some judges feel compelled to be like, no, the front yard is not curtilage. You can see it. There's no fence. We talk about these issues. Mm-hmm. I don't buy that. I think at the end of the day, if a typical cookie cutter home, front yard, driveway went to the Supreme Court and they said, is this curtilage? They're going to say yes. And I'll tell you actually one case I love, and it's a case I don't want to say out of Indiana but it was about junk vehicles.
Mm.
And the code enforcement officer did enforcement action on the front yard, a car in the yard, okay. and pulled the vehicle and junked it, whatever, without a warrant. Huh. No, that's curtilage.
Yeah, I mean, they had probable cause that the motorcycle was stolen Ryan Collins' house.
That's right.
So, yeah.
All right, I'm not buying it.
Yeah.
Yeah, Manny, please. And do you have my email? I'm sure you have my email. Absolutely. Let me do some more research on that so we can try to get that squared away. Let's just make sure, okay? I just want to make sure, I do a lot of smoking and joking on this thing, and a lot of people call and they're like, I don't really see this as negative. I see it as very mature that, officers are calling, they're like, hey, this is what this person said. This is what I think. Mm-hmm. And, sometimes I don't agree with the officer, because I'm like, I'm sorry, I wouldn't have done that.
Yeah.
But I just want to say, whoever's watching this, if you are on the other side of this, mm-hmm. just appreciate that you have officers trying to just talk these things through. And it's like doctors do it, lawyers do it, pilots do it, cops should do it. Mm-hmm. And it's a very mature thing to do, to be professional and try to work out scenarios.
Yeah. So I think that one of the greatest compliments I get when we go and teach and travel is that they'll put our YouTube videos or this show on and briefing or whatever it is with shift or training. And it just at least inspires dialogue. It inspires conversation. It inspires, to think about it. And to me, that's a win, for sure.
All right. This one is one of my favorite subjects. It's about Leosa. Mm. So this one is a chief.
Let me read this to you because you're going to answer.
Go ahead.
All right. Can a retired police officer who is Leosa certified carry a firearm for a security job?
Absolutely. Maybe.
There you go. Huh?
So Leosa is the Law Enforcement Officer Safety Act.
Mm-hmm. Got my card recently.
Yep. Passed by George Bush. Probably the only thing I like that he did. And actually, he did a few good things. I shouldn't be so harsh on him. But he did pass Leosa after 9/11. And it's, just like a public safety thing. You are now a recipient of Leosa. Well, you were a Leosa recipient, too, because you're active duty. Mm-hmm. But now that you're a retired police officer, you did that call.
Yes.
And so that you can carry anywhere. Except mainly three places: government property, state government property, right? Mm-hmm. City hall, if they prohibit it, private property where they don't want you there with your firearm, they tell you mm-hmm. no guns allowed. Just Leosa doesn't preempt that.
Yeah.
Or federal property, right? So those mean your three things. Mm-hmm. So it's my interpretation that the language of Leosa says that that's a lot of other areas that you can. So, for example, if state law says that you cannot carry in a church, which is ridiculous, right? I mean, but you can't carry in a church. Well, I got to tell you, it doesn't apply to Leosa because the church is not the one saying you can't carry here. There's nothing about a no gun sign. And it's not government property. It's not federal or state government property.
Right.
So they cannot tell a Leosa carrier, to carry there. Now, going back to this.
But the church could.
Oh, the church absolutely could. And I'm going to carry there anyway, mm-hmm. and we'll just deal with the issues. Exactly. I'll deal with the trespassing issue later, right?
There you go.
Okay. So here we have a person who is a retired officer. He has a security job. So the reason why it's maybe is because if the security company is an agent of that building and they're like, hey, you can't carry armed here. Mm-hmm. Well, Leosa says that's allowed. You can, a private person, a private company, a private business can say you can't carry firearms here. And if they're saying, hey, if you're going to do night watchman at the business, no firearms. Well, and they are allowed to, they are an agent of that business. I'm not sure they are.
Right.
But let's just say that we're stretching here, but let's say the business owner is also no firearms here. I just want you to patrol my property. Then you're not carrying under Leosa. I mean, what's the result there? Is it going to be a trespassing issue, or could you actually get jammed up for not even having the authority to carry concealed? Mm. And that could be a felony. You know what I mean? So
yeah,
you're taking a risk. Mm-hmm. I mean, is a prosecutor going to charge you for unlawful carry and hit you with a felony, even though you have Leosa? They could.
I guess. Yeah,
could.
That's the big question.
That's the big thing. Because you're not carrying under Leosa.
Yeah.
So
now you're under normal rules.
That's right.
Yeah.
And now there is look, so there is this issue, though, is that, a lot of people that are smarter than me believe that unless you've been told specifically, like, let's say I go to Walmart, okay? Oh, I'm sorry, Target.
Yes.
Come on.
There's Anthony Bandiera we're talking about here.
And it says no firearms allowed. Mm. I still think I'm carrying the Leosa because I have not been told specifically me to leave. Mm. And there are attorney generals out there that believe the same thing. Like, you're still carrying the Leosa or concealed carry because you have not been trespassed. Mm. That notice is not enough to trespass you, but we can debate on that.
Fair enough.
Okay. Okay. So what's the next one here? We have one from California. So, look, another man. Curtilage is a hot topic.
Yeah, it is. Huh?
Can a hit and run suspect vehicle be towed from a driveway? A victim's mother witnessed a suspect's vehicle collide with the victim and followed it. Okay. I think they're in two vehicles. So the mom is following the son. Mm. And she sees her son get hit by the suspect.
Okay.
That's what I think is going on here.
Right.
She follows the suspect and maintaining a visual to the driveway of a residence in the city limits. Witness observed the sole occupant exit the driver's seat and go into the residence, leaving the vehicle in the driveway. The witness waited for the officers. Officers received no answer at the door. Can the vehicle be towed from the driveway? And we're talking about this law here. And I did actually, have you read this law or no?
No.
All right. I actually did read it, but let me just pull it up real quick. So it's 22655 California. Okay. So it's vehicle code 22655. Okay. So it says, any peace officer while performing their duties, has reasonable cause to believe that a motor vehicle on a highway or on private property open to the general public onto which the public is explicitly or implicitly invited, located within the territory limits of the, which officer is employed. So jurisdiction has been involved in a hit and run accident. The operator of the vehicle has failed to stop and comply with, providing license and so forth. The officer may remove the vehicle from the highway or from the public or private property for the purpose of inspection. And that's it. So let's look at the keywords here. Police officer can remove a vehicle for a hit and run if reasonable cause believe that the motor vehicle was on the highway or on private property open to the general public onto which the public is explicitly or implicitly invited. So what's interesting is that curtilage has that implicit license, right?
Yes.
Do I have your implied consent? It's called an implied license, but do I have your implied consent to go, if I'm a new neighbor in your neighborhood, right? Mm-hmm. And can I go to your house at 2:00 in the afternoon, knock on your door and say hello?
Are you bringing over a welcome basket?
Hopefully, something like that.
Absolutely.
Okay. Do I have your permission to take your lawn furniture?
No.
Do I have permission to take your car? I mean, do I have permission to look into your windows and see if you're in the shower?
Right. No.
Right? I mean, in other words, is there some limits to my implied license?
Yeah, absolutely. And there is that implied license. The Girl Scouts, come on over, right?
Okay. So if you're a hit and run suspect, so far you've been a pot smoker and a...
My gosh.
You are a bad dude.
I mean, I've been busy my month and a half of retirement.
So if you are a... Because you're smoking pot, that's why you're a hit and run suspect.
Exactly, right?
So if you are a hit and run suspect and you drive home and... do you think the cops just should, based on just a general assumption, because that's what implied license and they have to assume things, right? Presume. Do you think they have an implied license to take your car from your driveway and inspect it for the crime against you?
No.
That's
why I brought it home.
Right. Right. Shame on you for not stopping.
Right.
But that's what this is all about. Mm-hmm. So when the law says private property open to the general public, which is not, that's a Walmart. Mm-hmm. They can absolutely take the car from the Walmart.
Absolutely.
Or it says, or onto which property is, it doesn't say or. It says on private property open to the general public onto which the public is explicitly or implicitly invited. Actually, so, or on, on private property open to the general public onto which the public is explicitly or implicitly invited. Okay.
And that's what, there's the keys right
yeah.
there.
Yeah. So it's the Walmart is fine because they're generally allowed to be there. It's an invitation. It's your driveway. There's some implicit license here, but you don't have the license to take your car.
Right. Yeah, because they said they went up to knock on the door, try to get some information. I'm fine with that, but yeah.
Yeah. And so what I think should happen here is if they take this car and there's a dead body in the trunk, I know courts are not going to want to do it, but it has happened. When you violate the Constitution, the court finds that it's curtilage, this law does not give you the authority to violate the Fourth Amendment.
I agree. Yeah.
All right, next case, and let's go back to that law here. Okay, Merry Christmas, guys. Okay, so this one comes from Michigan. In Michigan, baiting is illegal. So I'm not a hunter, fisherman, or whatever, but I get the idea. Mm-hmm. Putting some bait there so that you can trap animals. Yeah,
Zach and I are talking about this last week or week before.
Did we already answer this?
Well, kind of, sort of, but it's pretty close. Oh. Yeah, I think it's pretty close to what we talked about, but yeah.
Yeah, actually, okay. So this is one where if you're in open fields and you see a trail camera and you have probable cause that trail camera has evidence of a crime on it, can you seize that trail camera and watch it?
You can seize it, but the contents inside it, you're going to need to get a warrant on.
I agree, right? So you can seize it, but you just can't watch it.
Yeah.
And so that is all we have for today. So that is actually a perfect segue to our closing here. Guys, thank you so much. I hope you got something out of this. And if you have a question for us, for Mike and I, or any of our instructors, Zach, Chris McFarlane, John Ween, of course, we've got Mike Boone here, Jake Bigelow.
That's a good list.
We have a phenomenal list of instructors, and we have just a great 2025 coming up, which is actually another video we're going to talk about, which is where we've been, where we're going to be going at Blue to Gold. So with that, I appreciate you guys. Thank you so much. Mike, do you have any parting words?
Thank you all. Appreciate you for everything. Have some safe holidays. Enjoy, and appreciate you.
Yeah, thank you. All right, guys. Stay safe. Thank you.